Here.
Dinar.
Good morning, I'm present.
Afendi. McLean.
Here.
Morrow.
Here.
Pena.
Here.
Seaman.
Here.
Okay, yeah. Agenda item number two, declaration of conflict of interest. Any board members need to recuse themselves from the meeting? No one's listening. We got a meeting, I'm not here, so. Okay, then we'll move on to agenda item number three, review, discussion, and possible action on board meeting minutes. Open up the board for any comments or motions.
This is Dinar. I make a motion that we approve the minutes listed in agenda item number 3A through I.
Morrow, second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries, not opposed. Agenda item number four, items for board review, discussion, and possible action. A, applications for licensing of dentists or hygienists. Number one, Dr. Nicholas Viakis. Well, I'll open it up to the board for discussion.
And for the record, Dr. Viakis.
Okay.
It appears that there was one adverse action in 1993. Patient was taken about it. I move that we allow license.
Here, a second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries, none opposed. Agenda item 4B, number one. David Matthew Bond. Christine, anybody log in?
No problem.
It will open up to board discussion. So this is Hero. Burke recommended a letter of concern, failure to list the amount of anesthetic used for pull out extraction case, immediate pull over full. Full intro.
What's the matter of concern? It to be at to meet at 6 weeks.
No, I'm done. Yeah. I think here I'll make a motion that we issue a letter of concern to Dr. Bond for a failure to list the amount of anesthetic used in this case.
Morrow, second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
My only discussion is that now we're talking about one, when you're doing polar pull, you're probably pushing the limit to the anesthetic. And then, of course, we recall doing the maximum amount, you know, 8 carbons is the maximum for what we're doing. But convenient. That was my other concern, is that it was convenient to put in, oh, by the way, do I invert elevate the concern? No,
okay. We have a motion and a second on the table. Any more discussion?
Yes. Why did I write down to be 17 injections? Oh, but 8 carpets.
8 carpets. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Any more discussion?
How would we do it if we wanted to?
It would be non-disciplinary, and then with a CD of probably risk management, because that includes documentation and anesthetic and that kind of stuff.
What would we do with that risk management?
Well, I think both of those issues covered in risk management. It's not a hands-on, you probably wouldn't find that more his documentation more than anything. They probably done a number of these bulletin polls when the people have been doing a long time. So I'm assuming that he just missed the documentation issue.
I think it's only a vote when we don't have an opportunity to speak.
Yes.
I'm just sort of making some assumptions, but even with that said, I would still stand by the letter.
Will you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's, I will do a call. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries, none opposed.
Are we getting their response? I'm not hearing anything.
Our online board members? Mr. Dyer, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you, but there is a lot of background noise, but I can hear basically like 70% of what you guys are saying in the room.
Thank you. Dr. Ogini, can you hear us?
Yeah, just a little bit of noise in the background, so it makes it just a little bit harder to understand everything, but we can hear you.
Okay. Is that any better in terms of sound?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Moving forward, we will call on these votes. Agenda item 4B, case number 202000095, Dr. Paul Sandstrom. Do we have anybody here or online?
No,
no. Okay. Then I'll move on to the discussion.
It looked like the first recommendation letter concerned for no health history and a lack of a treatment plan.
Was there a lack of diagnosis as well?
I don't recall that one. I think the thing that there was a concern for everybody there was the fact that there's nothing in the notes for a health history update in 2007.
And he had charted in the clinical notes that he reviewed medical history but the form that medicalist had not been affected with.
Is it documented that the patient was promised the $4,400 refund or is that the patient's word for the dentist?
I'm sorry,
thank you. Was it documented anywhere that the patient was promised a $4,400 refund, or was that just what the patient said that they just never had a refund?
As far as I know, I think the patient had requested, but I don't know if the doctor.
I think also for us, if we were going to try to provide restitution to the patient, we'd have to elevate the disciplinary action, and I don't think this. So, with that said, does anybody want to make a motion?
Tomorrow, I recommend we take first recommendation and issue a letter of concern for no health history since 2007 and a lack of a document treatment plan.
Hero, second. Let's do a roll call vote.
Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes.
Denar?
Yes.
Ogindy?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Pena?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion passed, none opposed. Moving on to agenda item 4C, number 1, case number 202000126, Dr. Amanda Nelson. Good morning, thank you for attending. You want to make a statement or you just question? Right, can we square down Nelson? Dr. Nelson or Dr. Terrera?
Nelson.
Nelson.
Yeah, sorry.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Will you raise your hand? I just swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing.
So I remember something from our June packet that was American Association of Orthodontists. I think it's relevant to the discussion here, so just to refresh board members and the answer. It says prior prior to the initiation of orthodontic or dentofacial orthopedic treatment, in order to enhance the health and safety of the patient, an in-person comprehensive dental and oral facial examination should occur by a state licensed dentist. The dentist shall be currently practicing and have a dental license in good standing in the same state in which the comprehensive dental exam takes place. The dentist shall be searchable in the same state or database and be able to be contacted by the patient. It also says that the AAO fully supports the incorporation of teledentistry into orthodontic treatment, so long as the standards of care that best protect the patient's health and safety are not compromised. So with that said, I'll open up the board session.
Isn't there something in there about that there needs to be documentation of, like, either panoramas or colonoscopy x-rays?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot in there.
And then we also have a regulation that when we take an impression, it can be done digitally, but under direct supervision of the doctor. The dental system can take it for final prosthesis and so forth. So those are the things that are popping out. There's our state regulations and the recommendations of AAO. And let's define what direct supervision is. Direct supervision is, and you're in the office of it, that you are directing that that impression you take it, and that you're the one that submits the x-ray or the digital scan to the aligner therapy, throat aligner therapy. Those are my concerns.
And I just introduced myself. I'm Charles. I'm from the other firm. I'm a firm. I'm very good at that today. As far as, and Dr. Nelson can answer any specific questions about this, as far as standard of care on in-person, consultation before initiation of treatment, there is, no specific statute of regulation in Arizona that requires that. And in fact, the fact that Arizona has the health industry statute goes in the opposite direction. Health industry was meant to provide access to industry to patients in rural areas, for patients that do not have the time to come in person. And there's going to be a standard of care requirement of in person in every single instance that sort of that goes against the entire person's purpose of that. And as far as radiographs, I do want to point the board's attention to the FDA guidelines on radiographs. These were adopted in 2012 and they were also adopted by the ADA. And they specifically say that for a radiograph, there needs to be a specific dental reason for it. And it's not something that should be automatic, something that should only happen if in that specific patient's case, it's medically and mentally necessary. With that being said, I'll let you ask. So, a couple questions I can direct them to you. Feel free to answer if you want. When you're talking about the dentistry, do they physically have to go somewhere to get a scan?
Yes,
right? So they're physically not tough dentistry at that point. They're in person, right? That's one. Two, are we physically changing and altering moving of bodily structures when we're doing work on it, right? I'm just making sure. Now, are there adverse effects to moving and orthodontically changing teeth that may not be aware to the dentist or the patient does? Because they have implants or bridges that are unaware of at that point due to the scan. Could you tell me an implant that's not an implant for one, and two, can you move an implant?
So I'm going to defer to Dr. Nelson again for
Yeah, so we don't only use scans to evaluate the dentistry. A history of what the patient is claiming, but after saying, does the patient know, do they not know? We also use these oral photos to evaluate whether they have other things going on in their mouth.
Now, do we expect the patient to know everything that happened in their mouth?
We don't only rely on that, no. We look at the scans and the oral photos and the color vision does not exclusively to what they're saying.
Sure. I have dozens of times where a patient says, I have an implant and it's a root canal as opposed to me.
Oh, yeah.
Or, I mean, happens all the time. I can't tell the difference personally of localized implant versus the tooth, the crown. I personally can't. And if we're attempting to move that, that can cause major damage to an implant. It could cause the orthodontist to be completely failed at that point. So these are my concerns. This is why an X-ray is necessary, to be able to determine the structures that are in there, because it's your responsibility as a doctor to know everything that you're doing to that patient. And if you're going to cause harm and damage, that's where I start to worry. And standard of care is one thing. I mean, the statute of the standard of care is another. When you have a statute, that means you have a legal responsibility written down, like the understanding dental assistants can take an X-ray under direct supervision. That means dentists is in the building. That is a standard of care would be that we have a CAMRAS prior to starting to do anything. That there has been an evaluation, a periodontal evaluation, that there's other things that we've listed as AFO that is not being met here. So those are my main concerns. Not that I don't think that we're getting rid of teledentistry after the initial. There have been a number of times where I've personally mailed my aligners to a patient who's gone, snowboard or something like that, but I've done a pretty workup, which I know where that those teeth are going, and I know every single structure that I know.
There have been many times where I have requested an X-ray or further information, and I use the internal photos to evaluate the patient's medical health. I mean, it is our right to decide whether we want to make an X-ray or not, and so I don't always never require one. That's not what I'm here for, but I do use all the information to help know it. I feel like it's needed. I mean, there are a lot of studies out there that are showing that X-rays are dictated based on insurance and they're causing thyroid cancer and all these things. And so I do take that into consideration, and it's not that nobody gets an X-ray.
And doesn't necessarily mean you have to take it. I mean, you can get one from a doctor that has had one.
I do that regularly. It's just in this particular case, I didn't see it.
But it's not routine. You have to ask for it. You have to be able to do that. To my understanding, you're asking for information being submitted to you and the patient giving you their dental history. And that's the concern that I have, is that we're taking digital scans appropriately. We're not taking care of taking full advantage of some of the resources we have, especially with the minimal radiation now of digital. And the issue of digital radiation is almost nil at this point because it's like that, those rats out there. But you're missing an opportunity to take care of the patient as best as possible. Again, we're doing it full time. And then they become teledentistry. They've already been into a building. They came from a rural area into the building to get scanned.
Well, they actually don't always, so that it's not always the case where they go into the office where they get scanned. It can be big.
What percentage are you doing as an impression? And I looked into it a little bit too, because the impression rate I've heard from my research is for a small direct of other clear liner therapy companies that do this, their physical impression rate is like less than 10%.
Well, COVID changed a lot of that, so I honestly couldn't.
That's true.
I know it's a lot higher now than it was pre COVID.
This is Hero. So my concern was less of the teledentistry aspect of it. It was more the lack of TMJ evaluation on patients that had expressed some discomfort there. Dr. Governor, I'd like to hear your opinion on this as well.
This particular case is interesting. I read through the whole scenario. Apparently, the patient was supposed to go to a general dentist or a dentist to take care of them and have all the workup done, which would be a minimum of a full mouth X-ray to keep an eye out. I didn't see any of that information. I didn't see where the patient marked a TMJ positive, but you didn't do anything about that. What is your general duty once you see that a patient has TMJ problems before being worked out?
Well, we had a specific clinic and not or so there were no severe TMJ problems we had talked about. And along the way, there we talk often with the patient if there are any severe bias, if there weren't. So I don't feel like they did anything that was
I guess my concern is you didn't address it. You just, okay, you know it's there, but there's no information about it.
Well,
I didn't see any information in there about addressing the TMC issue.
I guess I'm not totally sure exactly what you're asking, because when we do alter the body to make it a healthier body, then we do improve any TMC issue.
I mean, my first concern is looking at the x-rays and looking at this indicator of notching, how much grinder the patient is, what condyle worn, the patient have arthritis. I mean, I can tell all that from just the panel, but you didn't have any of that information.
Again, I didn't feel a need for a panel because of the information. I did not feel like it was an indication for
him. You speak to your question.
I did. Thank you, Howard. That's enough, and thank you for being here. This is Kenna. My question regards the TMJ. May I verify the activity with the cooking? My question, maybe that's on here, specifically, what conversation, what documentation do you have that shows you address this issue with the patient? Because he reported that it was a non-blood issue.
I did not feel like it was an indication to go forth further because looking is not a contraindication. You know, I don't know. I feel like I'm falling short. I guess I know where you're coming from, and I didn't feel like it was necessary.
I think it's important, though, to also note that the issues, like we all have lack of panel, lack of PMJ, there's not really a causal relationship. Commercial is about a diaphragm in space in the feet. So to me, that mitigates some of this. I mean, it doesn't change my mind in that some of your practice was below the standard of care in this case. I also think that deviation didn't cause the issue of the complaint.
But it does open up the entire case.
Of course it does.
And that's what my concern is. You know, in the final result that a patient loves every time is impossible. And as far as the orthos concerned, sometimes we have open contact, and sometimes we don't get exactly where we need to be. That's fine. I think that's just doing ortho. My issue is have we taken care of the patient? Now, our job as the dental board is that we protect the health systems that are done. And if we're not following those guidelines, we're not protecting those patients. And what if the next patient will have? And the next patient, and the next patient. And that's what I'm concerned about. And it's a simple thing, though. Doing an evaluation, taking an x-ray, checking the variable, and then go ahead and, you know, mail the aligners and have them check in the photos and all the other stuff. And that's where telemetry comes in. But having that initial exam before you start moving physical structures that are permanent is my concern. And you talked about how you're going to address PMJ with the line of therapy. Now, are you moving molars?
Sometimes.
But rare, right?
I wouldn't say rare, but I would say the first molars is more visible, but
okay. And I find you don't get any addressing of any TMJ issue beyond moving molars anyway, because it doesn't open the vertical.
Yeah, I think it's having more of a patient's
final vertical. That's my bare concern. Now that the process I asked them, we sometimes don't give any results.
Sure, exactly.
Right. That doesn't bother me as much.
Me neither. And I guess my point in bringing it up is I like to return recommendations on this. Yeah, if the patient had an implant and that lack of ability to move the implant affected the end result, and the doctor didn't know that there was an implant there, was lack of panel, I think you start getting into discussion. Statute standard of care.
That's what I'm worried about. I don't worry about this case as much. I worry about the one next one, because they're going to issue a non-disciplinary, and if something else happens, then we've got to have a disciplinary, because it's the same way that if we had an anesthesia issue, too, and then we continue to provide anesthesia without life, so whatever it may be, it's going to escalate. So just a question here. The board's position that a radiographic is always necessary, is there ever? We follow AAO's recommendation for standard care. Standard care is basically states that what a reasonable general dentist in your situation, in your general dentist, right? What a reasonable general dentist in this situation would expect as the minimum standard, that minimum necessary requirement.
And I mean, to highlight that, the AAO also said revisions to clinical practice guidelines clarify that they apply to anyone, not just orthodontics, providing orthodontic treatment in order to best protect patient health. So general dentists are not.
So if it was just the lack of notation on a Hall test and the radiographic evidence was clear that the tooth needed a root canal, I would agree with you. I think the letter of concern of the dismissal is probably more appropriate. My concern with this is, without that Hall testing, there was no adequate way for them to come up with a diagnosis. 7 and 10 looked like they were virgin teeth. There was what appears like a radiographic radiolucency, but we don't know if that's a monogenic origin or not. And there was no report of pain in his clinical notes that I could find. So I don't know how he came up with the diagnosis. And at that point, you start to question if this was unnecessary treatment.
I think the abscess would have been an infection on the note.
But based off of the radiographic. Dr. Duggan, you want to weigh in?
I think some of the concerns I have on a case like this is that it's got a very low rate of lesion disease, but it's a two-dimensional picture of a three-dimensional object. So if one tooth may need a root canal, another one may not. Both of those teeth didn't appear to have any restoration. And it's a concern because a lot of times you'll get maybe pain from a tooth that had a root canal or something of that nature. I just didn't see a reason to necessarily do a root canal without some type of fault testing on this case, because obviously there was no restorations on his teeth. So the only way you know they're vital or not. So then you get into the conclusion, is it a sarcoma? Is it one of 20 different diagnoses that may be odontogenic or may not be odontogenic? I mean, you get nasal palatine cyst in that area, which would look very similar or almost exact to what that traits are. So that's my concern in that case.
And when you look at the X-ray taking when root canals on 8 and 9 were done, that periapical radiolucency on the X-ray is present around 7, 8, 9, and 10. And I want to do the next case, but there's no fault testing on these. We don't know if it's just odontogenic or not. You know, at least with 8, 9, there were some crowns on there, so you could deduce maybe some causation. Yeah, but 7 and 10, without fault testing, I don't know how we can say that the treatment is necessary.
Yeah. This is moral. This is the hard part of me. And we go down this road, it opens up a lot of roads in the future with endo and drugs. And are we going to issue a letter of concern for a non-disciplinary for everyone that doesn't, or disciplinary that doesn't hold it?
I just want to point out, there was no restoration on any of those teeth.
Oh, I get that. I mean,
that's a bigger factor for me. It's not like I have a crown and say, well, there's a pretty good reason.
So that's different than first recommendation. First recommendation was, we only have worried about stopping the patient not having a test. It wasn't that we did a root canal and did it, it didn't be done. We just don't know what it is. We just don't know what it is.
But, I mean, so, here's a couple things. One, as we all know, each case has a pain on its own. And that's why I even started by saying if this tooth had obvious decay in the nerve, we're not going to even most likely talk about non-disciplinary at that point for lack of that, because it's clear that it needs it. 8 and 9 could even rationalize for that. That's a good one. 7 and 10, the PA from when 8 and 9 were done in February 2018 looks identical to when it was now, almost a year later. No radiographic evidence of any kind of restorative treatment, and no clinical signs documented in the note.
Right.
Okay. You know, I wish you could choose somebody to ask some questions, but that won't weigh into the decision we make, sure we don't have to. But I would have to go to the disciplinary and non-disciplinary on this one.
Any other questions?
Do you have any?
The only thing I would say is he did put down both the product, and I don't think he presented that. So my assumption is that he actually did the test that didn't die. Or he opened the tooth and it didn't bleed. Because he opened the tooth and doesn't bleed in the product. But we won't know that until he opened the tooth. Because he's having the final tooth that he opened it. I'm going to make a motion.
Yeah, I just want to see if there's any more discussion.
Does anybody, any of our virtual board members care to weigh in? All right. Well, so my rationale is this. There's no form test. There's no way for him to diagnose this deed. Without a diagnosis, he can't pay the treatment necessary. I think this delegates to disciplinary action. So I'm going to move to offer the licensee a disciplinary consent agreement with 4 hours in risk management, 3 hours in ended audit, in addition to the regular CE requirements of a triennial license to be completed in 6 months, online course is acceptable due to COVID, and the licensee may request a formal interview or formal hearing if she's not acceptable. We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? Let's do a roll call.
Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes.
Denar?
No.
Ogilvy?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
No.
Pena?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Was Bruce? No, or yes, I couldn't hear. Yes. So motion passes, 2 opposed. Moving on. Case number 202000155, Dr. Rich.
David? Yes. This is the third of 3 cases. Dr. Cook saw this patient only 3 times. They first listed the exam, second were a root canal finding group 8 and 9. And the last one was a post-op check. And thereafter, there were 9 other office visits, other practitioners over 16 months, and there were no complaints about endodontic issues on number 8 and 9. In this case, the report summary said that there was no other band used. That's true. We have talked about the need for rubber dam every time, or if not an endodontic referral. And the number 2, we got the same thing about both tests. And kind of following up on your comments before, these 2 both had crowns on them. And in the notes, he wrote, A90 RC, teeth broken by brother, abscesses, period. So I think we're okay there based on the prior comments. But we would recommend that either dismissal or dismissal of the other concerns rather than the common use of it.
Thanks for being here. Oh, you're welcome. I wear a hearing aid, and there's a lot of echo in here, so I may be asking to repeat a lot.
We all have loud voices, especially in Athena. Then I'll open up the board, questions or discussion.
My only issue is rubber dam on this one. We had that, when you open this one up, there was crown on it, there was what I believe was an abscess. And when you open it up, it proves that there was an abscess that was put down in the product. But at the same time, the rubber dam, kind of what we've done in the past with endo was we always have done at least a letter of concern for no rubber dam. I don't want to jump to a recommendation unless someone else has any questions. This is Mara. I recommend we issue a letter of concern for use of no rubber dam for environmental treatment.
And no bolt
testing.
Here will second. We have a motion in a second.
Sure,
that's your role. This is Dinah. I'm sorry. Would you please repeat the motion? I had a hard time hearing you guys.
Sorry about that. My motion is that we issue a letter of concern due to no use of rubber dam and no documentation of bulk testing.
Thank you.
And Hero said, so Sherry, my new role.
Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes.
Denar?
Yes.
Ogilvy?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Pena?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries, not opposed.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilmember Dodd.
Mr. Chairman, two more cases while you're out here voted.
No, that's all right. I got two more, but I need to call the
Dr.
Reed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, moving on to agenda item number 4B1. Case number 2020-00114, Dr. Lucas Bradley. Appreciate if everybody signed in.
No one signed in at this point.
All right, we'll open it up for board discussion. I think first recommendation, disciplinary action is probably on point. There was no final communication x-ray. 6 months in, when they took it, there was radiographic decay over the margins. So I would be on board with the first recommendation.
And my issue is not with the temporary bridge breaking.
That's what it was listed, and that doesn't bother me at all. But I'm with you on that in terms of the, if it was boarding them.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a number of things you missed there. There was no document diagnosis for the extraction of 13. There's no documented signed consent form for the bridge. There's no documented signed consent form for the extraction. And then,
what do you mean it was
like a sign the radio probing too?
We need to put risk management in, so we took away another step.
Right, motion.
That includes the restitution?
Yes.
The entire first recommendation?
Yes. So tomorrow, I propose that we issue a disciplinary consent agreement that consists of 4 hours of risk management, 3 hours of Crown Bridge PE, and restitution of $2,374 to the patient. This is going to be the hours of PE are in addition to the triannual recommended requirement for CE. Can be done virtually due to COVID. Has to be done within 6 months. And if he chooses to, he can come in for a formal interview when he chooses not to come in.
You're all set. Your motion is seconded. No discussion. Sherry, you want to do a roll call?
Yes. Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes.
Denar?
Yes.
Ogenzi?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Tenna?
Yes.
Tina?
Yes.
Motion passes on the vote. Scott, do we need a list, since we have two disciplinary contenders offered the statutory violation, or can we just get that in the letter for the contender?
I'm not sure if we might need a list.
I mean, do we need to say what statutory violation was? I know who the contender is, if you want to go to our affiliate.
So, yeah, actually, yes.
Okay. So, we were assuming it's 32-12101, number 14, any conduct and practice that constitutes the nature of the health, welfare, safety of the patient.
That's good.
Yeah, so we can get a record that comply to the previous case that we also recommended. This disciplinary action on case number 2020-00154, Dr. May. I'm going to jump out of order real quick because I think we have a license here. Dr. Wall, we can jump ahead to letter F, malpractice, adverse correct report. Number one, case number 2020-00141.
Morning.
Morning. Thank you guys for coming in.
Good morning. Good to see you.
You as well. Stephen?
Yes. Congratulations. Thank you for everyone in person. So this comes to you from the result of an adverse occurrence report, which Dr. Wall promptly did as required. This was treatment for all on board. As you are aware, that was performed by Dr. Chris Barrett. Dr. Wall did everything that we have for procedure that we needed to do. He had the medical clearance from the primary care practitioner. There were no contraindications. He made medical history. He monitored the vitals. Drug Court Minister asked that court in the adverse incident report. And Dr. Wall, if you have any questions, I'll direct you to him for that. And then as soon as the incident arose, he promptly started the life-saving protocol that's required. The patient was stabilized, EMS was called, Dr. Wall listened to their concerns, and once the patient was transported, all of the patients to the hospital and really followed up closely with that patient multiple times. Unfortunately, the patient learned of a condition that he was not aware of prior, so there was really no way for Dr. Wall to be apprised of that beforehand. Fortunately, the patient was okay, and Dr. Wall is not aware at this time as to whether he had undergone cardiac stent placement surgery, but that was what was indicated was probably needed to take place. So obviously it rattled Dr. Wall. He rattled to be here, I think, you know, but I think the case should be dismissed without further review.
Thank you. I agree. I think your workup was above standard care, and you did a great job using up these. You're going to have some unfortunate incidents with the health care.
Dr. Wall, take a breath.
Yeah.
You did a great job, too. This is kind of, I make the most of this.
Motion and a second on the table. Can we get a roll call, Sherry?
Yes. Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes.
Denar?
Yes.
Ogindy?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Tenna?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion passes, none of those. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Conner, is Dr. Raby?
We love not yet. I'm going to the staff.
All right. Then we will go back to agenda item 4D3, 2020153, malpractice case, and Dr. Schnicki. All right. Thank you for being here, Dr. Schnicki. Can I choose that last name for you? Schnicki, that's a very good name.
So this case comes to you as a result of a settlement that was then reported to the National Practitioner Database. So obviously, in our position that because it's already been reported, there's already been a settlement amount. This is certainly not right to the level of disciplinary conduct. The consultant found that the allegation of inadequate quality endodontic treatment was supported, but did not give any recommendation as to how the matter should be disposed of. In this case, the procedure was indicated. I think the biggest issue, which Dr. Schmidt would agree, is that he didn't document all testing, which were offensive tests in the day already. But he did know that there was sensitivity, the temperature, and he did tell the consultants immediately that he had done the call testing and unfortunately didn't document that. But he recalled that the tooth was symptomatic with irreversible colitis. He discussed his plans. There was a large informed consent, which outlined a number of issues that can happen, unfortunately, while rare in endodontic treatment. The one such risk was overfilling the canals, and we believe that's what occurred here, although Dr. Keller opined that there may have been other causes of this nerve injury. The procedure by Dr. Schmidt was properly performed. If you looked at his notes, it was quite thorough as to exactly the steps that he took during the procedure, and he met the standards of care in that respect. What I would just like to point out is that so long as that surgical procedure is used, that meets the standard of care. The untoward event or the adverse outcome of this does not in hindsight mean that the standard of care was not met. And then his postoperative care and treatment was appropriate. The patient obviously called to gave the patient mental post-pack. He referred to endo, referred to an oral surgeon. If we can kept in close communication with the patient. The oral surgeon did note that the status of the patient was improving. We don't really know what the current status of the patient is. Dr. Schmicki has been practicing for about 20 years, and he's performed about 1,500 root canal procedures, he estimates. And this has never happened to him before, so it, again, was kind of a jarring incident for him. And he recognizes the issues with his documentation, but we don't feel that this warrants a disciplinary conduct. It's just not so egregious, I think, as to the issue with record keeping. He certainly has had a lot of time through the process of litigation to contemplate this and remedy any issues. So we're asking for a letter of concern. If the board thinks that some additional PEs is required, then we would ask that it be non-disciplinary. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to have a past, areas of things that happen outside this boardroom don't really apply in terms of the malpractice or the patients. You know, we take each individual situation as it comes to the board. So what happened in the past in other forms, it doesn't really apply to us. That's why we evaluate each one of these individually. That was the only comment I had.
Okay. I have a question. Thank you for being here. My understanding is you were working on number 31 in the VA pre-partitive of antibiotics to my page 417. What objections did you give?
Pretty much both the idea and IA. Okay. And also just this one bottle and just
IA anyway.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's really there.
And as far as I mean, the treatment plan, there was the lengthy enforced consent, which I think that, you know, the patient was all there at one point.
And I guess back to this, and the patient came in with thermal sensitivity, which you did document. There's a crown on there. Again, this isn't the same category of the black hole test. I'm seeing things I might not be wrong for. The only thing is I think to be irreversible, I think we got to have a linger 45, 50, 70 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, that's debatable and more.
I guess it's going to probably
slow down.
Rather than end the doctor, wasn't it?
I'm going to say, sorry. I mean, the minimum you think about is 20. I mean,
that's what I'm going to say. Reasonable because 20 still be at end of life or if you're going to CO2. One of them is colder. It has to linger at least 30 seconds. I mean, 7 to 10 is just that's normal.
And that's my concern. Because I don't know if it needed the stand up. It's only lasting that much. So. Now, with that being said, I'm a proponent of Liz Morrow. I recommend the outpatient and non-disciplinary for lack of pulse testing with pre-RSVP for endo.
Your standard?
Yeah, there's standard. 4 hours for a standard. Carol said, you want to in conjunction with above the triennial recommendations for CTE testing on the 6 months and can be done virtually due to COVID.
Sure, you can go home.
Yes. Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes, sorry, mute button.
Dinar?
Yes.
Ogindi?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Pena?
Yes.
Freeman?
Yes.
Motion passes. None of it.
That was an order, correct?
That was an order. I'm just clearing the
side. No, that's okay. It's just not this one. But I think it was an order.
Remain?
Yes.
Great. 4B2. Agenda, case number 2020-00135, actually, baby, and radius on the phone. Yes, could you please confirm that as a sort of gate? Dr. Reed, are you with us? You don't think that calls you said it was in the
don't have unmuted, it's on the phone.
You don't have unmuted, I don't have unmuted. First, please.
If you're on the phone, just click unmute. If you're attending virtually, you know.
He said he didn't. I called him because he didn't. There was one. We tried it out. All right, well, he's listening. I guess I'm still holding.
Okay. You want to make a statement?
Yes. The patient was seen for 22 months for various services. His report summary in this case found probably he was a doctor. The first was that he had performed bone grafting and filled a crown on the tube with a 6-8 millimeter pocket. I challenged the timing on that. That timing was done in August. A trophy was done that day and the patient was placed on 3 month recall. The patient came back at 3 month recall and now they're placed on 6 month recall. So the period was getting better. And this patient came in stealing and finding 3 month recall, 6 month recall. And then 2 months after the 6 month recall is when the doctors were there. So I believe that the period was in better shape at the time. The second thing was no confined consent form and extraction of the 15. That is true. However, there were two other extractions, one that was just 26 days prior to that. So I believe the patient knew what the conditions were and had it been presented at the time. The third thing was that there was no documentation of the dental maturity. And I don't know how the consultant missed this because I'm just reading the progress and it's resin-based composite. This is for 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 18, 19. On the crown in question, it says porcelain ceramic, all ceramic crown. So I think that was all in there.
And then finally, on number 16, the PA laser is non-diagnostic. I'll let you look at that and see what you think as well. Oh, and the final thing was, too, this kind of torqued everybody. Consultant said that it was a violation of 32.1263.15, which is a definition under unprofessional, under unethical conduct. If you're respected, you wouldn't think of his dentistry. I can't imagine starting at this level of unethical conduct.
I have a question, and I don't know if you can answer this, Mr. Conrad. It's just my own clarification. He used the code D7953 for the bone graft. Traditionally, my understanding of that code was always when you extract and graft for rich preservation, that's the code, not to correct bone defects. So I didn't know if he actually grafted on the tooth at the same time as the umbilical crown, or if he had done, say, he removed 18 at the same time, and he had grafted that, and the teeth numbers were transposed. But I don't know if you can clarify that or not. Any more discussion? I'm looking for the PA.
Yeah. It's hard on a little women don't have a full x-ray. It's not that the x-ray wasn't full, it's not blown up and it's shrunk down for our purpose.
Just to clarify, in May of 18, carryover readings from 16 were 4, 3, 6, 5, 3, 4. And then 1 year later, the carryover readings were 5, 5, 8, 4, 4, 6. That's a big difference in 1 year. Is that correct? Am I reading that correctly?
I'm sorry, I wrote them down. Yes, that's correct. So both the 6 and the 8 millimeter pockets in the disc were 15, and those are recorded in May at 29. And then the patient had a trophy that day with a 3 month recall. November 19th, trophy at 6 month recall.
Yes.
Ogindy?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Hannah?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries, no vote. Thank you. How many do we have here today? If any more results are. There's 4-1.
The 4-4 is 8. The bird that answered was still in court.
Yes. Okay. Agenda item 4B4, case number 2020015. Dr. Khan, please continue to be here.
Hi. I'm attending virtually today.
Hi, Dr. Khan, thank you for being here.
Hi, I'm so sorry. No, I couldn't be there physically.
Sorry, I appreciate you being here virtually. Brown, you want to square your time?
Thank you.
Dr. Khan, please raise your hand.
Yes. Sorry, I'm getting married tomorrow, so I have a henna tattoo. So. Don't get scared.
We're going to tell the truth and the whole truth, and nothing but the truth and the whole truth.
Yes.
Thank you. Do you want to make a statement, or are you here to answer questions?
I will answer the questions.
Okay. So I'll open it up to the board for any questions for Dr. Khan or conversation or discussion.
Dr. Khan, this is Dr. Morrow. I was wondering, what percentage of crowns do you do that have a buildup in it when you assume?
Usually the core buildup and the crown is always paired together. And we're a heavy access office, and that's usually just the case. But reviewing this case with Dr. Berschler, who reviewed everything, he had informed me that this case didn't warrant buildups. And we discussed why and the amount of wear the patient had existing on the lower anterior teeth, where it wouldn't warrant the buildup. So,
so do you think you do a buildup every time you go in a crown because they're paired together?
Usually, yes, especially if they have an existing restoration.
So can you give me what you believe the definition of a buildup is?
A buildup is a procedure that is necessary when the existing tooth does not have adequate structure for a crown.
So it's purely for retention purposes, correct?
I'm sorry?
It is purely for retention purposes, correct?
Yes, yes.
And so every tooth that you do a crown on needs a buildup because you don't think you can get retention on your crown?
Correct.
That was the only question I had.
Dr. Khan, what was your diagnosis for doing this crown?
I don't know if you have access to the pre-op intraoral photos, but patient has moderate wear, dentin exposure, and he had mild moderate sensitivity, and also he wanted an aesthetic improvement, so that's why crowns are recommended.
Yeah, I've heard that your revision class by short form crown. Is that accurate?
I'm sorry. Sorry. It's hard to hear.
I've read in the clinical note erosion collapse by short clinical crowns. Does that sound accurate?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Dr.
Thank you.
I can see you definitely. Mm-hmm. Yes, very. Well, and furthermore, I'm looking at the x-rays from the neurophenous crown, so I can see through them. And there's no buildup.
Yeah.
But we build up or build up. And how do you build up when you've got collapsed bites in the crown? Or if there's neuroproxy. So that's my concern, that we build up and the red toxicity was what we're an active body.
Yeah.
That would and they're paired together. So I think it's all increases the level of disciplinary action. All right, this is Morrow. I recommend that we offer a disciplinary action with 4 hours risk management, 3 hours CE in crown and bridge, due to restitution and restitution for the amount of the buildup, $1,064 that were not done in this. This is due to statute of
32-1201.01, number 14, conduct or practice that constitutes endangering the health, welfare, or safety of the patient or public.
I don't know if that's the right one. Three is being, this is not a danger issue, this is a medical issue. So the unprofessional conduct. Doing the best to your treatment is also dangerous because you're, but she didn't do it.
Yeah, sure.
She didn't do anything.
Scott, do you want to offer up a statute that might apply for an ethical?
I would be happy to, but typically,
I can follow the rule.
What about
32-1254-54? Thank you, Mr. Donner. 32-1254 C for unethical conduct. And that this she if she rejects it, she can come in for an interview.
Or formal hearing.
And the CE is to be done for within 6 months. It is to be done in addition to her triannual CE, and to be done virtually due to both.
Here are the second. We have a motion to second. Any more discussion?
This is Dinar. I have a question. So I heard the doctor say that the patient was an access patient. So my question is, what's the board's policy been regarding restitution to access?
The restitution, well, for one, at the, Dr. Duncan, do we know if the patient paid out of pocket for this? Because I don't know what access was.
I don't have that information.
So we can do research and find out if the patient paid restitution to go to the patient, if the patient did not pay restitution to go to access.
Good question.
Mr. Chair, 32-1254 can actually meet this record. So I'm not sure that
they would be.
It's probably 1254. Yeah, family.
I was going to suggest obtaining a fee by fraud or misrepresentation or willfully or intentionally filing a question to the third party services rendered will be read.
I like that one.
That's between 32-1201.01 number 15.
To tomorrow,
I'll read that again. Obtaining a fee by fraud or misrepresentation or willfully or intentionally filing a fraudulent claim with a third party for services rendered or to be rendered.
That's a good tomorrow. That'll be my motion. That's the statute. You want to second that?
Yeah, I would still put in number 14 as well on professional conduct. Order.
AMC was great, correct?
Calling in right now.
Okay.
And I told him how to unmute himself, so hopefully. Telephonic.
Star six. Star six, if you're on, Dr. Yule, you're muted.
Hello?
Dr. Yule, you on?
I can barely hear you.
Better now?
Yeah, I'm here. I cannot hear you. It's very garbled.
Try turning up the volume on your end. Dr. Yule, is that any better?
No, it's very, very hard to hear anything. It's like a tunnel.
So you don't need him to decide on the stage. You offer something. He is now appealing it.
Dr. Noel, if you can hear us, we're just really going to make a brief statement.
I'm sorry, I cannot hear you. Okay, I'll try that.
What we've discussed it and see it coming back in. My thought is we deliberated on this prior. The FPD is placed on building materials and we issued non-disciplinary order received, which complied with. I guess the question is, do you want to retract the order because he didn't see you?
Mr. Morrow, when you elevate a margin, I guess, it's not elevated by buildup, it's elevated by composite, correct? So that's my issue, is that he's making a case for putting a margin, a crown on a tooth with a buildup as the margin and not in the composite. So I don't think
I also think if you're going to do something that potentially outside the standard here, you got to make sure you're explaining the rationale of the memo. And you can't just be all of a sudden, because of the
I've heard the jersey.
Yeah. I think one of the issues that we also have to consider here is it wasn't a direct restoration. I believe it was a CSM. And you can't elevate a margin on a CSM.
I think it was a
chromium.
I'm back, but I can still barely hear you guys, but I have something I want to read. Barely. It sounds like everyone's in a tunnel, and the microphone is very far away from everyone.
Please raise your right hand.
Yes.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Okay, go ahead with your statement.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen of the board, thank you for hearing my appeal. Previously, I was unprepared as what to expect, never having been to the board before. I was not asked any questions regarding tooth number 15. The patient had been referred to me after a periodontist removed number 14. There was decay under the crown on number 15 that was subgingival, and at the time, the patient was 75 years old. I removed the decay on number 15 and restored it with Gerastor, a resin-modified glass ionomer that is designed for good bond strength, biocapability, and releases fluoride to prevent secondary caries. The patient wanted to do a fixed bridge to replace number 14 at a future dental hygiene appointment. The bridge was made without removing the small portion of Gerastor. A year and a half later, she was told by another dentist that she had an open margin and needed a new bridge. The local endodontist did not detect an open margin and the tooth tested normal. That is what happened with a patient, and the judgment against me said that since the bridge was on composite, I was in the wrong. Today, I bring new information and justification to what I did. When the concept of placing crown margins on solid tooth structure came about, bonding and resin material were not as good as they are today. There has been a new surge in the concept of deep margin elevation, invented by Dr. Dici and Serebchko in 1998. Currently, one of the biggest proponents of deep margin elevation is Dr. Pascal Monnier from USC Dental School. He has published over 125 research papers on various subjects, and I sent in an article from in my appeals letter on the paradigm shift written in 2012. When doing a single Google search on deep margin elevation, the first item that comes up is from the Spear Institute, which is one of the top continuing education centers in the world, which happens to be local. There's dental product companies showing technique videos and illustrates on how to do deep margin elevation. Even multiple YouTube videos showing the procedure. The Bard Institute in Gilbert is currently teaching a CE on the subject as we speak. As far as number 15 goes, the restoration and margin are sealed, which is the goal. I request that this case be dismissed in regards of numerous evidence showing crowns on composite as being acceptable and taught in CEs around the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Will.
The articles that were provided, or the document that were provided, these are opinion articles. They are not research. So there is no research on putting a buildup a crown margin on a buildup material. The elevated margin. There is nothing like that in the literature. It's an opinion of Pascal Magny and somebody from Spears. But there is no research. So show us the research that shows that it's okay to do it. And because in the previous research, it showed that it's not a good thing to put a crown margin in a build-up material or on a filling material.
Thank you, Dr. Rainey. Because, Scott, we're taking action and we're going to rescind this previous offer. Do we need to make a motion? Just
just to the motion we just uphold the previous work and request of you denied. The question you denied. Okay. Then I make the motion that we deny the appeal. Motion and second. Sherry, go to roll call.
Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes.
Nahr?
Yes.
Ogandy?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Penna?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries, none opposed. All right, 4FB, case number 2021-00184, Dr. Zeiger. Christine, do you have anything here? Right, you know what? I'm going to make a motion to go to executive session. Legal advice, and when he comes back, we'll close it.
Okay.
On this matter. Very stressful legal advice. Any comments? On second. The motion is second. Any opposed?
So, the numbers that are attending virtually, you should receive an email from Yasmin yesterday for the executive session. The breakout rooms don't work if they don't allow us to record the session. So what we need to do is mute yourself here, probably check the screen up, just on the off chance we're reading this, and then head into the executive session room.
The motion carried on the vote. I didn't hear that.
I got it.
Ultimately, I failed to report within the 10 days. I apologize.
Mr. Martin,
part of the injuries stem from the test itself, which triggers the reporting obligation upon filing of a criminal charge. So there's two aspects of it. One is the filing of the criminal charge, and then there's a separate set of reportable offenses or offenses on the subject of some kind of discipline. And I think, you know, for Dr. Zeidner, a lot of people who are practicing in front of the board, they naturally assume it's the second, but the board has on its website for the listing of offenses that include some sort of discipline associated with them, that there is a meaningful difference as to what you get at the end of a criminal case, when in fact the reporting obligation arises based on the charge having been filed in first instance. And that was the good here. And he simply understood the statute differently than that it existed.
I'll also add that I have not practiced dentistry.
And that doesn't matter a whole lot. I mean, you still have a license and an obligation. Right. Can you give another comment on this?
Yeah. Go ahead. That we give a letter of concern from that.
Okay.
You know, the final board.
What's that with it?
This is the violation of 3230A. Yeah. Issue a letter of concern if there's a violation. So you would have to say if you don't find the violation of 3230A, and then issue a letter. The only thing you can do under 3208 is issue or order $4,000 up to $1,000. So in addition to anything else that's more than 3208 now.
Can I ask you this point,
right? Well, the order that I don't think 3208 is going to issue a civil penalty up to.
No, so that'll fit in line with judging that one.
And it wasn't getting license at that point because it's not disciplinary action, it's a violation of it. It's a civil penalty in the board that you request the money. It goes to the state.
But would it be on the applied that lives in the website?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Well, not for sorry, 5 years is not. And actually, the minimum of 5 years right now, this last session. Now there's an animal.
But it's not reported to the National Practitioner Database or anything like that. It will be
What would be the reason?
Is it the health outcome?
And I think we can discuss the outcomes if it's not confidential matter. Unless you're going to read your contract.
No.
Okay.
What the minimal penalty we can do?
So, yeah, I don't want to hear the problem. We're imagining that I'm waiting. Where's my better comment? I don't want to know about this.
So part of that is on that statute. I am confused about when you have to report it, from the time of the incident or from the time you get the report saying that you may be charged with it or something. So that on there, I've always thought was a little iffy. So that's exactly what I was for this kind of thing. Exactly. So can you read that?
Yeah. So it says a health professional who is in charge. With a misdemeanor involving conduct that may affect patient safety. So if any misdemeanor that affects patient safety or a felony doesn't have to be tied up with patient safety. After receiving or renewing a license or certificate, must notify the health professional's regulatory board in writing within 10 working days after the charge is filed. So not the misdemeanor too about also not after the working day. And then in terms of violation, B comes up in statute says a health professional who does not comply with the notification requirements of this section commits an act of unprofessional conduct. That's there and define what it is. The health professional's regulatory board may impose
So when were you charged?
I was charged in January 2021.
And then when did we met with our work?
September 2021, is that right?
Correct.
The plea agreement really worked out.
Yeah, I was at part of the confusion arose from the gap in time between an incident occurred, which was December of 2019, and a charge was filed, which was January of 2021.
So all we care about from January until September, right?
Yeah.
We talked about for the sentences that happened the way, yeah, and yeah, it's important. And now, I think the civil penalty should be $100,
yes.
So what's the verbiage I'm asking for? That my proposal would be that we go ahead and agree that was the violation, that we want to do $100. What's the verbiage I'm looking for?
But you would not operate the decision.
You're an issue of what?
A civil penalty.
Civil penalty along with a disciplinary action due to unprofessional conduct, I understand?
No, so it would be a civil penalty of no more than $1,000. And then if there was additional, and it doesn't sound like there's anything additional, but then there's only additional that discipline or non based on what the rest of the record
shows. So this I have to, there's a disciplinary action due to unprofessional conduct when you read it?
Sorry, that's what you said.
So, the statute, it says the health professional's regulatory board may impose a civil penalty of not more than $1,000 in addition to the search for the client, in addition to any other disciplinary actions. So, you can take other actions, so like this involves more.
Yeah, so there doesn't have to be disciplinary action, you just impose a civil penalty of $100.
Which is disciplinary action.
First under what the statute though.
Are really $2,208.
All right, this is Morrow. I propose we issue a disciplinary statute associated with 3230208, as well as issue $100 civil penalty due to the fact that it wasn't reported to our statute.
$100.
Hero's debt. To be paid with the 30 days. We have a motion and a second discussion.
And
that's discipline.
And that's
the longer. That's one consideration at the end, because I don't know any of us like ever having this, but also from 2019 to 2021. Yes,
when
you had to figure out
exactly
when you had to notify.
I wasn't charged until 2020. It didn't happen, and then I just gave them.
Well, that was an 8-month gap.
Yeah.
From 2021.
Yeah.
When it didn't happen, there was time to talk to attorneys, call the board, and it didn't happen. What am I obligation?
No. I'm sorry. The incident happened, I was not charged during the incident.
Right.
I didn't hear from them at all. I said, well, over a year ago.
So the charge, after we were charged, then there was an 8-month gap. That's the other gap I care about. I don't care about the incident as much as I care about the gap.
Yeah.
And I understand that we were the last one to come in when this was not working.
There's emotional stuff going on too.
Yeah. And I think it was coming to say that we knew the business.
The only reason I said it's $100 at this point is because there was some time and effort put in by staff. You know, there was effort we had to follow up on.
Well, for the disciplinary.
And I know you have to go to the board. It goes around. But,
yeah, and to clarify, Sucker's item would still send the $100 to us. We were the product of it. We could still send the deposit.
Yeah.
So he's not responsible for getting out with it.
And
if we decide not to find a violation, you would set a massive precedent.
Yes
or not. So, and I'm not, I get part of the conversation, but that
I think you've already established what others need to some degree, so you can determine the amount based on.
And I think $100 literally sets the precedent. And then we can elevate that per egregiousness if we need it.
Any more discussion? Let's have a roll call, Sherry.
Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes.
Denar?
No.
Ogilvy?
Yes.
McLean? No. Morrow?
Yes.
Tenna?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries 2 votes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 5, I'm going to make a motion that we approve all items under the consent agenda. Motion in a second. Any discussion? Jerry, going to the roll call.
Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes.
Denar?
Yes.
Ogilvy?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Tenna?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries. Agenda item number 6, call of the public. Pursuant to ARS 38431, the board may make an open call of the public during a public meeting, subject to a reasonable time limit and demand restriction, to allow individuals to address the public body on any issue within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion of legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be put on a future agenda. Please identify yourself in the minutes. However, if you are patient on all the agenda cases, then we encourage you to talk about issues. Proceeding, you have anything lost? Then we'll move on to agenda item number 7, the investigative committee. We're going to have this kind of standing out of, you know, I think all this was done maybe afterwards. We did have one of the committee members that we picked no longer wants to be on it, so we need to pick another one. We also want to talk about Dr. Fritsch, a Rothman. So we have backups. We were talking, we want to work on Dr. Goldstein, Dr. Goodell, for a couple of weeks. I don't know any of them. So we lost Rothman, yeah.
I want a general amendment at least to follow up on
the amendment. And I'm sure it's Dr. Goodell.
Yeah, he's got a sense of
success. He's at Midwestern University.
Yeah.
He's either. All right. So I'll make a motion that we replace Dr. Frisch with Dr. Goodell in the investigation. Come on, second. Sherry, roll call.
Hero?
Yes.
Bird?
Yes.
Yes.
Ogilvy?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Tenna?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion carries, not opposed. We also need to talk about terms and how we're going to stagger the committee members' terms so that they're not all coming due at the same time. So, Brian, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so the... you guys served 4 hours. 4-year term, and you have a possible 2 terms, and then you, I think you have to be out of the year and you reapply as the governor's office to be reappointed in the future. So it's a total of 8 years. There's a lot of boards that will operate self-operating committees in the same fashion as they said. You don't have to do that. That's
This is Diana. If I may, Mr. Chair, if I may make a comment. So I thought the initial purpose of putting together this committee was that we had certain specialists and provide their expert knowledge on certain complaints to the board. So my initial thought was if we have a complaint regarding maxillofacial surgery, for example, we want the maxillofacial surgeon on this committee to be to be at least on the committee evaluating the complaint initially. So if that's the purpose of the committee, I do not understand the staggered terms and kind of static boards instead of doing it on a complaint by complaint basis.
I think he's saying you have specialists utilizing their knowledge longer. Is that correct, Mr. Diner? You're saying you have specialists that we extend their term out of date?
Well, so my understanding is all of these are members of the committee, and if there is any case that is requiring the expertise of particular members of the committee, then those members should be part of the committee. And my other concern is if it's an 11-member committee and we have staggered terms, all of those 11 members are members of the committee, so the quorum is 6 people.
I think the kind of chopped up, so
now, one other suggestion is we do a 5-year term if that will start right now. My guess is there will be some people that fall out within that 5 years and they will automatically start staggering anyway.
I mean, I'm just going to be honest, you're probably going to have an attrition rate in every single year. You probably have, I mean, 5 years reasonable. I think you would have enough attrition that you wouldn't have to worry about that.
That's what I'm thinking too. We're not going to get all
the money. And even if we don't have as much attrition as we think with Packer around that point, that should look like some that won't want to do it again. So just do Packer strengthening.
Perfect. Yeah. And then it'll work itself out.
Yeah.
By year 10. I think that's better.
Makes it less complicated.
Yes.
Any other aspects of the committee that board members want to discuss? Ryan, what we can ask how to work or how the recommendation is that the committee would run?
Yeah, so we're trying to model it. Actually, kind of awesome. You know, we've got work represent. And we're coming to look at a couple more things before this gets discussed. You guys right now have the authority that current path investigative committee, the subcommittee for the advisory to you. And so there's nothing in legal about what that would take for account. The only thing that we would want to do is solidify it in statute. So we are looking to go into the legislature in 2022 to solidify this in the statute. A couple of things happen with that. One is there's no clear, doesn't create any ambiguity, and we can pay them, not for anybody's fairness to get paid. It's almost an all for their position anyway, but we can't pay them at some even now, if we're pointing to the step to the term, they will not get paid on the initial meeting because they don't have to get paid. So that's what I want to do is that for. So the process would work similarly to have something. Trust me, where I stand. So the board office would receive a complaint. We would review it kind of under what's called an initial analysis phase so that it creates some sort of confidentiality to protect the licensee. Because right now, if you look at the agenda today, there's people's names that are on there that don't want their names probably advertised on a public agenda. And whether the outcome ends up based on the recommendation or not, their names still on the agenda. We could agendize certain things under an initial analysis phase where it's just a number. So it's kind of associated with the name here. And then it creates some sort of confidentiality. The compliance are confidential. They're never released. Licensees probably should be afforded a little bit of that as well, at least on the onset. And then if they're through the investigation, something is substantiated from the allegations that are presented, then you could open an investigation, further investigation, and do whatever else you need to do to come to a final conclusion. And the committee would basically be the one that directs the direction of the investigation. It would be with Dr. Duncan and the other contract investigators, probably every month, during a meeting, a public meeting. They can do investigative interviews. You guys are not allowed to do investigative interviews. This would allow them the opportunity to do investigative interviews and possibly close the case when they're recommended to closure. There are some boards that allow statutory authority to their subcommittee to dismiss cases, much like FERC exists. The way we have it proposed going to the statute, it doesn't currently, but I'll start to figure out what it is and we can write some of this. And if there's statutory authority given, then it may never even have to come to you to have another project at the Apple courtesy. So then I just think it makes it a better, more pure, operable investigation so that people feel like an investigation took place and it took place publicly. And the folks are complaining, nobody's ever happy with the outcome. Somebody isn't, and a lot of times both people aren't because the complaints generally want an accusation. And somewhere in between is where you have to find the justice. And so that's where you guys come in. And then you guys will be the final choosers. They're always going to be just recommendations. You can page it or not. And then you could remand something that, like if there wasn't enough investigation done, and came, you didn't have enough information, remand it back to the state, have them look at something, and then bring it back to you.
Thank you, Rick. If I can just add something. About 12 years ago, you said that we had interviews where you have a panel. I don't know how you're familiar with how that works, but you have a here, we have the attorney on one side and the dentist on the other for the number of representatives, and then you have three people on the panel, generally a layperson, a chairperson, and then maybe another dentist or a specialist. And you were able to ask questions back and forth there. You could get so much information. It was so helpful because I can tell you it's so difficult now to try to piece things together based on what we on the information we get. It would be a better way to adjudicate cases. It would be a better way to have a more predictable outcome before that difficult court.
I've had conversations about this for a few years now, and I think it's going to be a big thing. All right, we've already started the process. A little bit. But I don't have any more comments. Let's move on to agenda item number 8, which we're going to skip.
Right. So we have questions. Those that are attending because of us, this was my error. We anticipated that the rules committee would be done and they work, but then we have to talk to whatever the proper notification is. So we have to skip on 8 and have it on December 3rd. So my apologies to those that are attending for that.
Then we go into agenda item number 9. Can we have any inquiries I'd like to see about the vaccine mandate?
I just received a couple of points that I spoke to Tucker and I spoke to not all that stuff on my board. So they asked me all the time about the mandate. I don't think they're super concerned about it. One of them is vaccinated, the other one is not. But, I personally didn't involve enough staff here. I don't know if they need that something to find out whether or not you receive a question. But Joe, if you're here, you need to see a lot of the people who are involved on this. I think you can get involved. So, this tomorrow, if I could put part of the 2 cents in here, I have a feeling the vaccine mandate is not going to affect, again, speculation, normal sole practitioners. I think if anything, it's going to affect large corporations. And so that if there's money you want, it's going to be size regulated due to corporation more than it will be job.
There was part of the issue that about for healthcare facilities that contract Medicaid and Medicare.
Sure.
But my understanding, I read quite a bit on it, it's not applying to physician offices or dental offices, facilities. So hospitals, ambulatory surgery centers, and a slew of other state licensed facilities. So
and number of employees.
But yeah.
Well,
it's over 50 employees. Unless it's. It's over 100 unless your healthcare facility that contrasts with Medicaid Medicare, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, because they're the one being paid for through the government.
Right.
But the number of dental offices that have a large number of offices in place, that's how much is the large number?
I'll let you know. So we're working on that for the current thing.
Yeah, I'm glad that contrast access when they're asking their questions, but as of right now, it seems like it didn't come up.
And Felicia has like several different, like, so there are several agencies that they also have state OSHA requirements. And from what I understand, the federal OSHA passes it down to the state. And if the state doesn't have the OSHA, they have to accept the federal OSHA does. But if they do, and Arizona does, then Arizona's OSHA department has to make a decision within 30 days of federal social requirements on whether or not they're going to adopt it. Arizona, and if they don't do anything in 30 days, then the federal one automatically takes shape. And it is 100 employees, those are 100 employees. But in, so far, everything I've read doesn't say anything about dental offices, and ADA doesn't say anything about dental offices. So I don't know.
You know, we're
talking
about the corporate that employees are going to be people. Corporate
Yeah, I think those are some of the parts. I don't think
issue that they're here different places?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of nuances with some people. At least those ones. But that's what happens. They tax laws and don't really know how they operate. So they're in operation. You're trying to visit them. So we, for now, I think we're just going to continue to say we do get calls, I think, from periodically to the board. I think they're waiting for us. That's not us. You guys either say one way or the other and whether or not you're going to mandate in general offices, and I don't think you have that authority. And I don't think that's fair.
I do not believe
so there are people that are likely to be that are waiting to hear what the board is deciding and whether or not to go on the answer or not. And the ones that I speak to, you know, this board, I don't believe that the authority. And we have yet to receive a written request that is beyond the agenda. But this is always on the agenda. This will be a rolling thing. And you can skip it over to the chat.
This is Diana. May I state something for the record?
Yes.
Thank you. So I just wanted to state that Arizona has joined a few other states and challenged the OSHA vaccine mandate in the 8th Circuit. So, I mean, insofar as the state of Arizona has spoken regarding the vaccine mandate, the statement is that they are challenging the vaccine mandate that's coming from the federal government. So I just wanted to state that for the record. Thank you.
Then moving on, agenda item number 10, the Assistant Attorney General report. Our leader, Scott, wants to highlight it.
Honestly, everything spelled out is in the serious point. I'm really getting, if there are any questions, because generally speaking, these matters have taken to our infection.
There's none that are super earth shattering. I think there's two types of ones. And I'll put more on the topic.
Then we'll move on to the executive director's report.
Yeah, number 11, right? Yeah, that's top off the first part to Christina on the budget.
Just really quick, we have a budget. This budget was actually created in 12 or 21, so not all of the revenue figures and the expenditures are the figures for the month over. However, for the revenue for the month of October, the total is $18,250. Expenditure total was $38,751. So, as I said, there are a few items missing, especially from the operating costs. Right now, our remaining appropriation is 1.6 million. Any questions?
So, I sent out a report. I did not. That sent out my report to you in a separate email. This came out, I think, this week. And it had a couple other things, but my report was in there. And so, Christina prepared the budget. The second item was the sunset audit. Everybody's probably receiving emails from the auditors and my office regarding the audit. And I don't think I responded to a couple of things that we received public audit emails before.
kind of joke with him a little bit about that, because there's, you know, a little bit odd. But every agency has to go through an audit period where, so we're sunsetted, which means that this agency will no longer exist after 23, unless the legislature agrees to continue the sunset audit and extend it for another. They used to do it in 5 or 10 years. If you had a lot of audit findings, they usually did it 5 years. If you had little, they did 10. Some legislature a couple years ago said, hey, we only have four-year terms, and we're limited to 2, and we only have 8, so we should only let the agency do this for another 8 years. None of them all meet at the same time, and the agency is the same, so it's kind of a, it was a kind of a weird argument, because it sucks. So the max will probably get to 8 years, and I don't think they do anything other than 8 years. When does this go to the legislative body? In calendar year 23. So even though the audit is starting right now, it will not go before the legislature until January 23. It's generally a pretty easy process. The audit is not. The legislative movement is. We'll be under a new administration by then. And so there's no way to predict exactly what will happen in 23. Based on Governor Ducey's administration, there's only been a handful of agencies that have actually done that, is the last of which was the nursing care administrators. And so the dental board, I think, is going to stay regardless of the administration, but they have to go to them. We have no doubt they're going to be finding, because there's policy figures that we don't have. There's a lot of stuff that I think I could probably have helped the rest of your problems, because we want to get the audit kicked off. The audit is public. Some of the questions are confidential. And so you may get a call periodically. You may not get a call. Most of it can be addressed by Christina and Sherry herself. If not, we'll try to get staff, and then there may be a need to call you guys in. Not likely. But that will start. It's already unofficially started. It's officially started. We get 2 days before Thanksgiving, and that will be the 23rd. That would be the official pickup date, and then we'll find out from there what it's required. The new renewal that I just talked about, so that we talked about summer term benefit, and so I'm going to talk about it here. We kind of created a problem if you read my EU report, and it was fully not appropriate. We went from a June 30th expiration date every 3 years for a licensee to now birthday every 3 years. We've essentially created 365 expiration dates every single year. I don't know if we'll have 360. I don't know if there's 4,500 or so licensees that we really want to do. We'll have one every day. I think the chances are good, right? So we're actually trying to go back before the legislature to clean that up. I don't feel like it's going to be a problem. 22 will be a problem. Not, I'll say, a problem. For lack of a better word, we don't really, it's not a problem. It just won't be corrected until probably 23. So we'll have to live with the 365 expiration dates at least 1 year. So we're trying to remove it the first month as opposed to the first day. I assume there's a great experience. So that's where you guys are. So right now, and the thing that's terrible is it becomes effective January 1st. 22. And so if you have a January 1st birthday, the law currently states that you have to renew on or before your birthday. There's no opportunity to even renew right now because the law has become effective, and we're still trying to work out trying to do this automatic, where the database vendor that we're using, everything is automated through them. And we just ran into a couple of wrinkles. That's what they always do. So everything that we thought was going to happen is not going to work out where they have made us assume things are going to happen. So we're trying to figure out exactly how to work with them on the automated process. If you don't renew on or before your birthday, and 30 days before your birthday, it's just you opportunity to open those, you have 30 days till after your birthday before it becomes expired. If it expires, then not only you pay the $100 penalty, I think it's only $100, and then you can renew. You can renew up to the first, fair enough, 13 months, first
24
months. By paying the $100 penalty agreement. If it's outside of that, yes, it's fine. So that will still stay exactly the same. What we're trying to do is change it to any birthday that occurs in any given month. They do have that whole month during this, and then the next calendar month of their birthday. Yeah, exactly. So, and Senator Barto is going to ban the bill last year. We're going to meet with their colleagues this month to try to get it through. And she didn't pursue this either. It is what it is, and that's how it happened. So our apologies on that. The issue is the staff is having, and Sherry, feel free to jump in here. The expiration date and the fee. Right now, I don't think we have a problem with the fee, because the fee, they didn't pay anything for the previous 3 years. This year is the first year they paid. 22 will be the next. And then the final group is perennial in 23. And everybody's paying a 60% investment based on that fund balance. So we've already tried this. Well, some of the people that are doing 20 lights, because the lights is on the wall, so it's June 30th of 22. They will expire if their birthday is before June 30th. And so we're getting people arguing the fact that I think employees didn't pay first, so then they pretty much stop right there. But it still says June 30th, and they're correct. There's a lot of change, just like any law can change. And just because you have something on your wall, we will still expire it online, regardless of what you have on your wall. So, and insurance companies look at this almost daily. So does the DEA. So what they have on their wall may not reflect what some of the others. The issue is we are running into, the bigger issue is now we're running into beyond the E is the CE requirement of 72 hours for dentists, 54 for a dentist, and so on.
Well, haven't they
ordered? Yes, not yet, but we are. There's been a notice for probably about 1,000. So I don't know if you know this, but a lot of people wait for the very year and maybe the last month to do their CE. And so there's the ask is
confusing about this with IR blog
A lot of people wait for ask is, I don't know what they call it, but ask the thing that they do every summer or fall.
Fall and spring.
The general convention.
The general convention in April. In like the first week of April, first week of April. There's a ton of CE given at that, and a lot of people wait for that. And I'm already getting, just like I told you, two of my students for daughters, they test them. I don't know what they were, but one of them is not in November, again, in July. So they'll still be able to get their CE on that. But there are people that are waiting for that to be called for CE, and they reserve their basis before that. So I put in here and was thinking of CD on the CE, and this is what I'm going to do. So the CE, and I'll just use 72, you know, it comes to the other stuff, but just the interview 36, in 36 months, it's not 72 hours. January is 30 months. They have 30 months to do 72. Nobody present, I get that. Most of you guys are done 6 months. But those that aren't present, they wait for the last day. And so, the one thing I've seen in this building is
and maybe not even a board, but maybe board of staff, that basically says they put a box on CD and they blamed it on COVID that you don't have to do any CD to renew your license. There's, I don't think Governor Ducey has said that any executive order that says you don't have to do any CD. It has been at least one board done where it has been monitored by the governor's office. So as much as you throw licensing and not throw regulation, it this, even though it is regulatory harm, CD, he was not happy and the board was only it. So I would never suggest that, nor do I think about that solely. So there is, I could write this in my executive directive, which I'll bring up. There is the 9-hour reduction. So every profession, you guys have lowered the threshold of CD by 9 hours. Each profession has to go to school. We're in the final phase of the building, so we're looking on that and a few others. But it's still not your goal, so it still has the same thing as the 9-hour reduction. But you can address, I think, and perhaps any of your help on it. You can do one of, let me say, four things. You can do nothing because they've got 30 months for those that have a renewal in January, 31 in February, and so on. You can grant the renewal licenses of all of the 22 licensees and possibly 23. Between the months of January and June, each year, granting extensions for them to meet the CE budget period, because one of the years ago they had thought that they had a budget period, so you could just do a blanket extension, so we don't have to take extensions for whatever reason, disability or any of that stuff, they just get the June 30th. This year's happy that someone gets a grant extension. I don't know if they have the ability to grant based on the point, but I would think that'd be possible. So that way it integrates with that, and then we integrate July 1. They have June 30th. Through June 30th plus, they have another 6 months of their birthdays and September finish. You could, this is another option, you could grant the license, and you could divide the 72 hours by the 36 months, which for a dentist would be 2 hours a month per year. And then so if their birthday is in January, they do 8 hours less. I don't know if they have that ability to prorate because it says that they do, but they have to do 6 months of the year. All right, let's get it. But those are the do nothing prorated for everybody that has a renewal date in January and June, or just do a one year extension to get 72 by December, June 30th. So they can get their license now. So the one problem that would be problem. The one thing that we have heard is so it's the term is not for me to be wrong. It says, and I just remember that I'm not sure if it's true, that if you grant the extension for CE, and say one of the CEs they took in 6 months was disbanded, and in that 6 months, the board received a complaint and it dealt with risk management, would the board have a liability because had they taken the risk management within the 6 months, will there still be the same liability to the board grants of the extension? It's kind of a long shot, but there is that caveat.
So what if we deducted, like you were saying, prorated. What if we prorated and will they still have to take like risk management or whatever maybe dentists have to take? those would be part of the ones that would have to be taken before the verdict, correct?
There's certain required ones.
Yeah, there's required ones. Those would have to be taken, and then the ones that we elect may not have them. Because you still, they could give this management and then there's a liability.
Probably, and then I understand concerning whether or not to leave the risk management that would create this possible issue down the line, certainly. I think probably from a legal standpoint, the first action would be granting and to the issue. The fact that it's response to an unintended consequence of a legislative change and the unintended consequence is pretty drastic. The extension, the question then becomes what kind of change in the grant Brian's outlined is certainly as extension grant. So the issue of certain goals would also be an extension up to when the person that has been required to have their consent and had the presentation not like the effect. It would be sort of extraordinary.
What if everybody had to have done the June 30th? Even though it's in the beginning.
Yeah.
What if we just had everybody had to have done June 30th? The
problem is these issues of license renewal for 3 years in January, February. One of those requirements that they should be
waiting. Right, but they're saying you have to get extension or you have to.
Yep. So I'm thinking, what if we just did this and said that anything up until June, whatever date is on their wall, they can have the granted extension if they ask for it till June. And
you don't want to have to do that.
Well, isn't it? I was going to ask, what's that? Yeah. So, I remember before, by the way, it was granting a waiver. So, if your birthday is in January, you receive 12 hours would be raised because you had 32 per month over 36 months equals 72%. And again, I get the precise damage and stuff as well. But and we can figure that out. So you could either raise it or extend it to June 30th. But if I have my own responsibility for sure, if it's still pretty something here, it makes it difficult to manage, like, which ones were mandatory versus which ones were elective. And so I think that we'll still issue the license far in the other answer on the application. And then just do a blanket extension for anybody that has a current license on the wall through June 30th, who has a June 30th. It may make it hard to follow up, but that's easier to follow up on that than the mandatory versus elective. And then also the ones that, and that get an additional up to 6 months additionally to make them do their CE by June 30th. So I think we should just keep it within your birthday date and based on the things you bought.
After June 30th.
Right.
And the reason we just for 2022 because everybody else will have 90 of those.
So I, in my memo, I put 22 and 23, but it's best your decision because everybody that believes in 24, they have on their current, their expiration is their birthday for cancel because they just renewed 21. So the only 2 years that this affects are the licensing that they did this year, or not this year, 22 and 23. I agree. But you have that. The thing is you could probably just do it for 22, maybe readdress it to 23.
We're also considering waiving the late fee.
Are you talking about waiving the late fee if you extend? extend it to June 30th if they go beyond?
If you were having January 30th birthday and you didn't realize you were supposed to renew until, because you're June 30th on there and you got a call saying you're expired, and they say, oh, we didn't realize it's a birthday issue. Okay, it's $100 fee because you didn't realize that. And you have to do the CE, we'll wait for the CE until June 30th. Are we going to also waive the $100? Because the thing on there is the same.
I don't think so. There's been so many emails that have gone out.
Try to learn more of it.
Everybody. No. There's always going to be an unhappy amount of people, And you can try and rectify that as much as you can, and we do, but you're not going to please everybody.
I want you to help everybody.
It doesn't work.
Scott was just looking at that because the agenda item doesn't need the full action plan. I would prefer to get a motion.
And before we go, Brian, do you recommend we do it for 22 and 23 and just be done with it?
Well, I'll tell you, my memory is so bad. If we don't do it for 23, I didn't forget because it's obvious. So I think maybe revisit 23 if something doesn't work out for 22 as opposed to. I think we can revisit it for sure, but I would prefer 22 and 23 to be fit in the same world, unless something changes in the re-agendizing. In the future,
all right. So, tomorrow, I propose we make an extension for license granting of the licenses due to the new birthday clause and expiration dates for the years 22 and 23. So that we withhold a late fee penalty to anyone whose license doesn't renew, renews before June 30th. Of 22 and June 30th, 23, the calendar year at end. And then we also grant a CE extension to the end of June 30th for any person whose license expires between January 1 and June 30th, well, 22 and 23. That's reasonable. Did I cover it all?
Yeah.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? Sure, you want to go home?
Hero?
Yes.
Bird? Denar?
Denar, please call.
Elvindy?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Morrow?
Yes.
Pena?
Yes.
Seaman?
Yes.
Motion passes. One vote. That's six.
Okay.
I apologize. My computer was muted. That was a yes from Morgan Berg.
Thank you, Morgan.
So a couple things. CDCA is coming up in January, and it won't be agendized on your agenda because they're their own committee and they pay for people in attendance, so there's no requirement to get those. But there will be several board members going. I think everybody has already said they are or aren't that are present. So in person anyway, if you're planning on going, will you just shoot me a quick email to let me know? Because we'll probably have to post something on our website that says that board forum will be present to watch. Because there's a lot of you guys that are examiners for RED and or CDCA and how it occurs because we make it probably very likely to pop. So keep that in mind. And we'll talk about for the business of the CDCA. I left my agenda at my house. My wife has a study to turn my agenda. So I'm looking at my phone without the clock. The other thing is we just met with Emily Mercado, Jasmine and Christina, and I jumped in if I missed something. So we are moving forward with the board's recommendations to change the legislation or change statute based on a few things. And I'm trying to get all the renewal we're just going to clean it up to be first month as opposed to first day. The requirement of an AED machine in every dental practice, at least one in every dental practice. I thought it was awesome when you sent out that that quiz and the comments that all put. Most people got that question on. That's 76% medical. But that's a good thing because they already believe that it is a requirement. And so it's a requirement and it's not a fault. So it's good to see that we in drugs because maybe they have the machine. So that's one. Or two. The examination requirements are changing from we're writing out rather than maybe from putting in cycle mode test. So it would basically eliminate somebody testing under OSCE that they could still be popping down mannequin or in person or patient. So the cycle mode. That was based on
and it may not be, but
yeah, I think that may be something for us. We could have to be
not part of it. Okay.
That's not good. Again, just a question was you know, I just wondered if you do it.
Okay. Agenda item 13. You should be
So, next question I have then is, now that we've made a ruling of people, an entity prescribing orthodontics without x-rays and carrier probing and not following a guidelines, would it be appropriate then to call back in any entity that is doing it? Because that is a business policy and not a doctor, decision.
Not sure they even have policies
here. Rulings against the license.
That's what I'm asking. But the issue is, it is a corporate policy that they don't take extra. It is a corporate policy that they're making impressions without a doctor under direct supervision. The issue we hit today was that she as the provider did not do it, but is that going to change things? Because their policy is no x-rays required. No, that's not their policy. If you read that 41-page informed consent, there's a whole section on this. It must be a dentist, a general dentist, who has taken full mouth x-ray series and panel.
If I may, this is the following of the session of our new license, in the session of the corporation is actually
I guess my question then, can we investigate, put in the future agendas, looking at policies by a corporation and not following our section?
If the board, violating the board statute, or
so that's my suggestion. We put that into the fourth next board agenda, that we look into any clear aligner therapies, companies that are not requiring things that are in our statutes.
So you want to rephrase that for a minute?
To rephrase it, I'm asking that we, in the future agenda, that we evaluate the corporate policies that are not evaluating or following our policies in getting records required in an environment that is against.
Could we just use standard of care so it's more complicated?
Standard of care, and standard of care being impressions taken without direct supervision. Digital impression, as well as standard care dealing with perio and x-ray verification by the provider.
Is that clinical radiographic?
Clinical radiographic and radiographic assessment of a patient.
Does that include just the PA, or does that include
radiographic?
I will not be here either.
We have a 40.
So can we make the veteran of therapy agenda item on the following board meeting, not the December one?
You don't make one. That's going to be a long meeting.
Yeah. Can you have it be that following one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to keep it in the chat.
What do you say, calm?
Agenda item 15, adjourned. Yeah, motion for adjourned.
Tomorrow proposes that we adjourn the meeting today.
And I'm second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.